Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to Creekside with Don and Jan. If you care to live in harmony with nature and the land, and you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man, if self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jan. Sit right down and make some space, Creekside with Don and Jan. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jan. No more singing, no delay, Creekside with Don and Jan. Creekside with Don and Jan.
Well, howdy and welcome again to another episode of Creekside with Don and Jan. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
And I'm Jan Stover, and this is episode 349, one away from the big 350.
Hey!
A monumental accomplishment, if we do say so ourselves.
Well, yes, without a monument. Yeah, well, we would even need Monuments Men in order to find one. But it is an accomplishment.
I will
go with that.
Okay, cool. And today is
50, yeah.
Right. And today is October the 6th.
And it's the day after the big event.
That's right. There was a big weekend. Greenville was just chock full of people Friday night and Saturday. And there was the art walk that had been brought back and combined with the Harvest Festival,
mm-hmm.
made for just a really
monumental
event. Monuments all over the place, Don. Anyway, it was great to see all the vendors in the street. And, of course, when I say see, we saw them from inside our shop because we didn't get out.
Yeah.
We were so incredibly busy. And the weather was wonderful for the season. I mean, you couldn't have better weather for an autumn event. And it started out chilly, and people came in the coffee house, and they had their sweatshirts on. It was like, it's sweatshirts and coffee drinking weather.
It was perfect.
We saw a lot of people switch gears from their iced coffees to hot coffee and hot drinks, hot lattes, which is always fun to see. And then as the day warmed up, then some of the orders began to change, and we just sold a ton of stuff.
Right. We were everything but wiped out.
Physically, we were wiped out. And all the counter, the cases were empty of food. And we did come back, and we normally aren't open on Friday nights, but since the event was happening on Friday, we just thought, well, we'll just open the doors and see what happens. My goodness, people kept coming in and lining up. And
I bet we had, 150, 200 through here.
Yeah.
So easily.
It was really nice. A lot of them were vendors that were nearby and wanted something warm to drink of an evening as the day started to get colder again. And then there were just people walking down the street, and we had our lights on. And Becky, who works for us, had just made sure that every window that we rent with Creekside Community Brew had orange lights in it, and it did its job. People noticed. And again, it was the right season, the right color. Everything came together to make that just kind of an enticing entrance way.
And we were pushing pumps of pumpkin and caramel.
Mm-hmm.
And
Becky had made new apple caramel scones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had thrown together some pumpkin muffins.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had our standard fare as well. And
we made cinnamon rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And those were a hit.
Mm-hmm. And of course, on Saturday morning, then your
biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits and gravy, right. So that was really good. And then on Friday, and we're going to make this a tradition, folks, every Friday, we're going to have soft pretzels made by Piety Hill Bakery. So those were a hit. Those just sold out like crazy. I know we're jumping back and forth from Friday to Saturday here as we kind of remember the weekend, but it's a blur. How's that? Maybe that's why we're saying how much one thing happened on one day and then, jumping to the other.
Yeah, and all of that was a lead up to our autumn dinner, which
That's
was
right.
also right now sort of a blur. It was one of the best dinners we've ever had.
Well, I love them all. I love the themes, and I try to make an effort of making those themes come to life in the magazine through the people that we have write for us and through the articles that we put together. But then when the real come to life is the manifestation of the autumn dinner and how it happens.
You bet.
And so that was really fun this year for folks who may just be tuning in for the first time. We did Frontiersmen all year, and of course Daniel Boone was a well-known Frontiersman.
The quintessential Frontiersman.
Right, and in truth and lore, because I think his story kind of grew, and we learned a lot about that with, you know, some people have a tendency to mix up Daniel Boone with Fess Parker.
Right, the Fess Parker version of Daniel Boone the is actor. Not what we had last night.
Right, the actor. So anyway, we every year have an autumn dinner based on whatever theme we've put together. Angie Chute has been our presenter for the last 3 years. And it was amazing when she came out dressed in her Rebecca Boone attire and represented herself as Daniel's wife in the outfit that her mother had made for her. And her mother was here, so that was neat. And
barefoot and with a bonnet. And it was cool. It was all period. And she really fit the part.
She did. And so after, let's back up, though, and talk about the meal, because you'd mentioned how good it was. I purchased the Rebecca Boone cookbook, and even when we talked about it, people said, is that, did Rebecca write all that? And Angie, in character, said, well, you know, she didn't know how to read or write, so chances are good she didn't actually write the cookbook. But it was recipes handed down and tweaked over the generations and from Boonesville, Kentucky. So
yeah, Boone lore.
And
well, I wish lots of people could write and read and were able to scribble it down, you know, because those memories were fresh in people's minds that could read and write.
So we started the meal off, and I had gone through that cookbook and selected three different things that I knew we wanted to have. Actually, four.
Smothered chicken.
Daniel's favorite, nonetheless.
We had
Tomato pudding.
Tomato pudding, right. I couldn't think of the word pudding for some reason.
Well, tomato and pudding.
It didn't come. No, the tomato and pudding don't normally go together.
They don't, but it was such a hit. And I think that we have discovered this, and we mentioned it when Angie was on the program the other day. People had said, oh, tomato pudding, that sounds terrible. And we said, just wait, because most of the times when we select something that's kind of oddball off the wall from a cookbook, whatever we're using that year, that turns out to be everyone's favorite dish. Right. So we said, just hang in there, bear with us, you're going to like it, we're sure. And certainly that was the case. So we had the smothered chicken, we had the tomato pudding. Pickled eggs, yes, and they were so good.
And how on earth do you have, how do you keep eggs without refrigeration?
Right, and I think you had made the point a couple of episodes ago that so much of the recipes at the time were based on not only what they had and had access to, but what they could keep and how they could keep it.
Right.
So that's another good point there, Don.
Yeah. And then finally, last but not least, it was black pepper cookies. Oh, my goodness, they were good.
They were so good, and I dunked them in our coffee. And they were even better. I think, like we said, when you dunk those in the coffee, it's like the pepper got
activated.
It did. Yeah. And it was so, it was just enough. It wasn't overwhelming, but just enough to make it really obvious and so yummy.
Yeah.
And then when we were looking at the meal, and I was talking to Roxanne, because Roxanne and John made the, they were the chefs and sous chefs and servers and whatever needed to be done last night, along with Becky Tracy.
Whoever needed to play Girl Friday, they did that.
That
was Becky.
So, but when I was talking to Roxanne, I said, always before we had planned where we had courses, so people would enjoy a first course and a main course and then a dessert. And we had not come up with a main course, excuse me, not come up with
a salad.
A salad of any kind. And there wasn't anything in there in the cookbook that struck me as something
salad-esque.
I want. Salad-esque, yes. So I thought we need to have something. And of course, we thought of the season and where they came from. And we knew that apples and walnuts would be available. And I had started to throw in cranberries. And you said, Jan, they're in Kentucky, they're in Missouri, chances are good they're not growing cranberries there. Think again. So we decided to come up with just a baby greens and throw in apples and walnuts. And then John discovered an apple cider vinegar dressing already made up, and it hit the spot. So
well, it did.
The first course came out, that was it. And we also had pickled eggs on the table. Everyone was served those pickled eggs, but they also came, they were on the table. And I looked over and I thought, I think you did it at the same time too. We're going to try our eggs in our salad. And I looked over and Linda Barth was doing the same thing.
She's already chopping.
So that was another good way to combine that with the meal. So it was just, everything was cozy and warm. The feeling in the coffee house was the same way. And everyone got to know each other that didn't know each other already. We always go around the room and have people tell a little bit about themselves, how they came to know the Owl Creek Gazette, how they came to know us. And then we extended this year and just said, say whatever comes to your mind, anything you want to share. Well, as Angie had talked about when she was Rebecca Boone in character, she was talking about the Native Americans because there was always friction and run-in, and then also times that the Native Americans and the frontiersmen got along and worked together. So as we were talking about the different kinds of tribes, people would go around the room and they would say, well, I'm Fourth Cherokee or I'm something Sioux. And so we found out there was one whole table had everybody that had Native American blood.
Yeah, no,
it's like,
kidding.
You're sitting together and that works out good.
Well, our image of Daniel Boone, of course, is a Hollywood image.
Like we were saying with Fess Parker.
Fess Parker. Mm-hmm. And Ed Ames as Mingo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not really the way it was. But maybe they were friends. Maybe he mm-hmm. had become a friend of an Indian, a Native American mm-hmm. or two, and could, count on that friendship and trust and relationship. And for our sake, for our future's sakes, from that point, from that perspective, you can only hope that that's what happened. But, we think about in 1812, we had but at the 1800s, early 1800s, it was our Hills Fort Massacre.
Here in Greenville. You know, mm-hmm.
And we don't think in terms like that all the time. And we need to remember that we are the ones that were encroaching on people that already lived here for thousands of years before us.
Right. And we've shared that in this issue of the Owl Creek Gazette a little bit about those thoughts. And we've also talked about it on our podcast. It does us, it bodes well for all of us to remember history as we learned it, and then also take a minute and think, well, there's more to this story.
Yeah.
And that's what history doesn't always share. Well, but, it's out there. You can find it, especially now with the internet. You can do your own research and see where Native Americans and frontiersmen worked together and where they struggled to do that.
At our age, what they taught us in grade school was just absolutely wrong. And it's just a proof positive that, history is written by the winners.
Mm-hmm. And that's a common phrase, and I think it remains common because it's so accurate.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Well, we wanted to share just a little bit for those of you listening who didn't get to come to the autumn dinner last night, some of the things that Angie shared as Rebecca Boone. Her presentation, her portrayal, could be solemn at times, could be sincere, and then at other times it was just a hoot. It was hysterical. And she told us some things that the whole room was just laughing out loud. Again, some of the history that we never knew.
She said, I'm hesitating to tell you the rest, but I realized that I was invited here to tell my whole story. There were many moves and changes in our lives. Daniel was gone for much of the time. Sometimes I moved with him, but sometimes I needed to stay where I was. We received word that Daniel was believed dead. It was so hard, but not unexpected, with the harsh life that we were all living. Daniel was gone a total of 2 years in this period, scouting and serving the Cherokee uprising. And when he finally came back, it was to joy, tears, surprise, and a baby girl.
And that's when the room went, what? But wait, there's more, folks.
I'm begging you not to judge me, she said. We all thought that Daniel was dead. In the midst of our shared grief, Daniel's brother Ned and I sought comfort in each other. My baby girl, Jemima, was born during this time. When Daniel stumbled back into our home and back into our lives, he saw this baby. I told him outright that I thought he was dead and that Jemima's daddy was his brother Ned. Daniel said, well, I reckon she's still a Boone then. He loved her very much and actually told others that she was his favorite daughter. There was no issue between us. Indeed, we went on to have 6 more children together. So there shouldn't be any issue with y'all. Well, I suppose you'd call that grace under fire. and later on in the story, she shared with us that their family had moved to Femme, Osage, Missouri, Vim Osage Valley, Missouri, and lived there the last 10 years of her life. Both Daniel and she had died there. It was the longest time they'd ever consistently lived in one place. Daniel died 7 years after she did. The grave next to him was already taken, so Daniel was buried at her feet.
The grave next to her was already taken, yeah.
25 years later, they were exhumed, and their remains were moved to Kentucky. But Missouri didn't tell Kentucky that Daniel wasn't next to them, but was at the feet. So the wrong body was moved with her to Kentucky. It seems that both places wanted them, and both places were claiming him. There was a large marker in both locations claiming the gravesite of Daniel Boone. So,
so those are just some fun facts that she wove through her presentation, and her complete presentation will appear in the November-December issue of the Owl Creek Gazette. It'll still be wonderful. It was much more fun, I'm sure, to see her do it in person,
yeah.
Barefoot and dressed accordingly.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's Angie has always shared then what she's spoken as the written word then in our magazine. So at least we can kind of give that to people who weren't able to come. And that's always a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And she did such a good job. And she always, well, last year she brought a gift back for you. And it was the, she'd found it in a bookstore in Italy. And it was Little Women in Italian. It was written, you know, it was Louise May Alcott's Little Women, and it was written in Italian.
And I think that was actually for us, because we had been studying Louisa May Alcott and learning all about her, and that was the theme for our autumn dinner. So,
well, she couldn't find anything related to Daniel Boone for some reason when she went to Italy, or when she went to Greece this year.
Right. She and her husband do, well, they try to get away every year and do some major trip. So, yes, it took them to Greece this year, and she said, they don't know a thing about Daniel Boone in Greece. Go figure, folks.
But she did find that they are aficionados of the owls and owl culture in Greece, and she brought with her a little owl key tag with a big blue eye in the middle of it. And so you went and found out what the reasons for that big blue eye are.
Well, first she told us about
it are not bad English.
First she told us that the owl, like you'd mentioned, was a favorite in Greece. The owl was a symbol for Athena, the goddess of wisdom and strategy, before the Greeks gave their pantheon human forms. According to a myth, an owl sat at Athena's blind side so that she could see the whole truth. I like that. And in ancient Greece, the owl was a symbol of a higher wisdom, and it was also a guardian of the Acropolis. So that's kind of the history of the owl. And then this eye is something someone had mentioned, like the evil eye. And it's not that the eye is evil. It is supposed to ward off evil. And this is a symbol that they, I even read that they put around babies, newborns when they're born, or decorate their.
Ward off, right. It's right. To ward off evil. Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of neat. So we've got our wise owl, and no evil spirits can come and get us.
You've already got it. You've got it strapped to your keys already, so it's with you all the time.
That's right. And then she gave us a cute little owl magnet to put on the refrigerator, so we'll think of her all year long.
We'll put it up there next to our I Got Your Back.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture of two stick people on a refrigerator magnet, and one of them's holding the centerpiece of the man, and the woman's stick figure is holding the centerpiece of the man's back. And she says, I got your back.
I got your back. Yeah, I got that for you for a, I don't know, a birthday present one time many moons ago. So there's never a dull moment as we wound down the weekend, and I was laying in bed going, I've already got an idea for next year's autumn dinner.
No, not yet.
Yeah, well, the planning begins early, Don. And before we move on, we want to say thank you to everybody who came to the autumn dinner this year, to Roxanne Bola and John Wrench, who made the dinner possible with their cooking, and to Becky Tracy, who helped them serve. And she's done that in the past before we really knew Becky as our employee here at Creekside. She was friends with Roxanne and John and helped them serve up other meals, or helped Roxanne. So it's just a continuation of all the same people coming together to make this happen. And it was, we had people from Missouri drive over to have dinner with us.
People
and,
from Indiana drove over.
Mm-hmm. So we've got new folks that came, new faces that had never joined us before for the dinner, some who had never missed a dinner all these years. So it was really a nice combination. And again, that community we always try to build. So thanks to everybody.
We even had people for, all the way from Panama.
Yes, but
Illinois.
I was going to say. So that it was really a wonderful evening, and several people are saying it's the best food we've ever served. Several people are saying it's the best presentation. The vibe was really nice, and I think part of that was because this is our coffee house now, and I think it lends itself to feeling more like our home. So we had a chance to kind of share our home, not just our event, with people.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good way to say it, don't you?
That's spot on.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, you done good.
I used my words well, huh?
I can talk good.
So anyway, while I was thinking about everything that we might do next year, and of course you and I go from we're never doing this again to yes, we're going to do it bigger and better. We vacillate, but what I wanted to say was I came up with an idea that I kind of ran by you, and you kind of nodded just like, oh, dear, Jan, rest a day.
For right now, I'm just nodding. And then,
but it has.
I heard you.
I heard you. That's all you're committed to. I heard you. But what I have in mind is the Foxfire book series as a theme for next year. Now, we've mentioned it in the magazine before. Bill Johnson wrote an article about a friend of his that was mentioned mm-hmm. in the Foxfire books. Mm-hmm. And then
I believe his last name was Black.
Yes, it was. Bill mm-hmm. Black, I think.
Bill Black.
Great article. And then the book has also been mentioned by Brett Casto in their column, in the Tibbetts House column. Mm-hmm. Many people that are into simple living and heirloom skills will be familiar with Foxfire series.
Even preparedness, yes.
Right. So those books are great, and we've mentioned them, but I think we should dive knee-deep into them, Don.
Knee-deep?
Knee-deep.
That's not a very good diving platform. We can wade in it.
Let's wade in.
I'll hurt my head if we dive in it.
We'll wade in knee deep, and then we'll dive in what?
When we find the deep spots.
There you go. So anyway, however we get into these books, we're going to enjoy them, and they're just great. So I don't know how
we're going to enjoy them, aren't we?
We will. I love them. So I just started to YouTube Foxfire books this morning when I was sitting in a chair going, I can't move my body. I'm so tired, but my brain won't shut down. And I found, all kinds of great information. But there is one character that was, of course, a real-life person in the Appalachian area. I think she was from the Carolinas.
She was a Nations, I believe.
Here's the interesting part, Don, that you may not know now that I have discovered. Her real name was Aunt Erry Carpenter, and she was portrayed in the film named Foxfire by actress Jessica Tandy, and in that film, her name was Annie Nations.
Okay.
Now, I don't know why they didn't use her real name. Maybe they didn't have permission. I don't know, and a lot of times they do that when they turn a life into more of a fictional story.
Yeah, but the Nations name is an Appalachian family line. So
okay. So anyway, but this Aunt Erry Carpenter just looks like this coolest woman. And what I've read about is that out of all the characters the original series showed and presented and shared, people ask the authors, and of course the authors were the young kids themselves, the high school students that went out and interviewed all these people. But then when it got put into a book, even the editor said the one woman or the one person that got talked about the most was this one woman, Erry Carpenter. And they thought of her as an aunt. The kids would go out and eat meals with her, like Sunday meals, and they just all became really fond of her and she of them. And so I just sent Angie a note, and I said, hey, I think I have an idea for next year's theme. And I told her about it. She said, oh, that sounds awesome. So she's on it.
Oh, she's already on it.
She's already on it, Don.
I don't know what I'm going to do with you.
Love me in spite of it all. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, that sounds good.
Sounds like a winner. Sounds like a program. Sounds like a plan.
It does.
Sounds like we'll wade in.
wade in knee deep and hurt our hands.
After 40 years. Anyhow, I think that's about all we've got for today, isn't it?
I don't know. I think you're ready to go home. I'm not sure. So anyway, that's what we're thinking about next year already. I want to say one more thing, Don, because we had talked about every spring we've done an expo or a home show or an exposium.
Oh, here we go again.
or a fair. Well, we know we want to bring whatever we have here to the coffee house. So that's going to alter how we proceed. But it by alter doesn't mean it's going to scale it back. It may enhance it in a different way. I've already thrown it out to you that I would like to have a spring luncheon.
And that's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea at all.
Yeah.
And if we could pack 300 or 400 people in here, that'd be great.
Look out, 300 or 400 people. Okay. So that definitely is not scaling back. But those are some of the ideas that we've got in mind and how my mind churns on regardless when my body comes to a screeching halt. And again, we want to thank everybody for making everything possible. Next week is our 350th episode. So we're excited about that. Like we said, a milestone without a monument. a monumental occurrence. Yeah, minus the monument.
No marker.
No marker.
Other than the time and the number.
We might make ourselves a little monument.
We might.
We might not. So next week at the coffee house, we plan on, with the weather getting colder, we plan on doing one dish meals. We plan on doing soups. Keep tuned to Facebook for the details there. We'll be posting what the menu is coming up. And we want to thank everyone that shopped with us this weekend. It's been a hoot to get to know our customers better and people from out of town. Yeah. We were able to enjoy and visit with them in the midst of all the hubbub.
Yeah. And, you know, we are getting I'm getting to the point where I can assemble drinks and faces.
Oh, yes. It's so fun when they come in. They'll say my usual.
Yeah, there you go. That's all they need to say.
Although I want to tell you this.
Of course, I did give one girl a blank stare. It is like, gotcha.
After about your 300th drink of the day when you've served people and new faces in the midst, it's like, whoa. But I was so exhausted when we started on Saturday morning, which is a really scary thought to be exhausted in the morning. But someone came in and ordered a medium pumpkin pie latte. And I proceeded to write down a small caramel latte and how I got from what they said, how that went filtered through my brain down to my fingers. And I looked up and they're like, no. We usually make sure the drinks get to them correctly. But boy, there's this lull when my brain just goes, no, I'm going to give you this drink.
You really want this.
You really want this. And he really didn't. So we got it corrected before the drink was even made. But that's, you got to laugh at yourself and with yourself, because if you don't, what are you going to do? Yeah. I mean, there will be mistakes made, but, you know, try to keep it. Somebody said to me the other day, as long as you're smiling, Jan, we know you're okay. So that's what we're doing.
Indeed. Well, it's been fun, and thanks for listening, and we will check you next week. Make sure you come into the coffee house. Say howdy if you heard us, okay?
Absolutely, folks. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye now.
Night.